Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
Dude, that's Smiley Kaufman for 61. Wow.
I'm Smiley Kaufman, and this is The Smiley Show. What's up, y'all? I am fired up about today's episode. This is a guy I watched all year long and was so impressed with the improvement he made to become one of the best players in the world. He got hot at the end of the season, winning the last two FedEx Cup playoff events before rolling into that performance at the Ryder Cup, which merited MVP honors. I am, of course, referring to Victor Hovland. This is a great listen, but an even better watch. If you go to our YouTube page now by searching for At The Smiley Show, you could see Victor breaking down video of his short game improvement and reacting to the first thing I said into a microphone at the Ryder Cup. So let's not waste any more time. Here's Vic. We are happy to be joined by Mr. Victor Hovland, winner of the Tour Championship, European Ryder Cup stalwart. And Victor, what is it like to have such a catchy tune? Like, have you found yourself since the Ryder Cup just humming that just every now and then? Because I am.
Not that one. I've hummed the other ones because there's so many great chants. It's like, it's hard to keep track of all of them, but it's pretty cool to hear, especially when we played so well and it was such an incredible week. So it's cool to hear those things.
I mean, that whole Ryder Cup was just a crazy experience, and I know you guys played so well, but since then, what have we been up to? Have we had time to actually hit the reset button? And I know you were on a pretty long stretch of golf.
Yeah, it's been a busy year. And it seemed like, you know, every time I teed it up, it was some sort of a big tournament.
Right.
So every single week there's a lot of pressure and you want to play the best you can. So I went back home to Norway after the Ryder Cup, didn't really touch a club that whole week.
Good man.
And then I decided to take a quick vacation with my mom to Malta. And I just got back last night. And I'm here for a couple more days, and then I'll head back to the States.
How was Malta? I've never been. Couldn't even find it on a map.
Yeah, it's a small island just off the coast of Sicily, another island. So it's not that far from Rome, where we just were a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
But I've heard it's got just a lot of history. It's nice temperature this time of year, and it's got a lot of, you know, old ancient temples.
Oh, cool.
That I watched from The Ancient Apocalypse. It's a Netflix show that I was just fascinated by, and I've already checked out a couple of things that's in the show, and I just figured, hey, me and my mom can have an enjoyable time all night island, enjoy the heat, and we can also check out some cool things. So it was a fun couple of days.
Well, this wasn't in the interview script, but now I have to ask, I mean, how often do you think about the Roman Empire?
Not so much the Roman Empire, okay. But
it wasn't in the script, but now I'm like, okay, this guy sounds like a guy that thinks about it often.
I think the history is really cool, but it's not something I'd like to think more about, like even way further back. You know, okay. A 1,000 years ago is not interesting enough.
Dude, that's fantastic. I mean, I'm in for that. I'm in for good weather. I'm sure just right off the coast of Rome, that can't be too bad, especially how good that weather was that week. But as far as golf goes coming up, just Hero World Challenge, is that it as far as the rest of the year goes, or do you have some other events you're playing?
Yeah, still quite a bit of travel.
Really?
Wow. Yeah, I go back to the States, spend a few weeks there, and then I fly straight to Dubai for the last tournament over there on the DP World Tour.
That's right.
And then I have 1 week off, so I'll go back to the States and then get ready for Bahamas. So we still got two more tournaments coming up.
They've, I know it's Tiger's event, but the Hero World Challenge might as well be your event at this point, as well as you've played there. But
it's been a good run.
Yeah, no, definitely. So I'll look forward to watching. Won't be there, but I kind of want to take you back, man, because like Vic, I've seen you just from like the college stuff, and then obviously out on the professional tour. But back in Norway when you were a kid, I read that your dad kind of got you into the game, traveling to the States and his interest. And really, the first time you put your hands on a golf club, was it instantly that you knew like this, I'm a natural at this? Or was there a lot of hard work or somebody that put a lot of time into giving you, whether it be the ingredients or just the love of the game? Like, was it always like supernatural for you?
Well, I probably hit my first few shots when I was about four.
Okay.
So obviously I don't remember much, but I remember, cause obviously I did other sports when I was seven. I started playing soccer. That was basically all my classmates and all my friends. We would just play soccer. And then I also started doing Taekwondo and then also golf. So, I did multiple sports, and when I was 11 or 12, I was like, hey dad, I kind of want to practice during the winter months because it starts snowing. It's already getting pretty cold outside and most of the golf courses are shut down. So this would be the time of year where I would just not play golf, but I kind of wanted to get a little bit more serious and practice in the winter. And I just remember like I was never the best at my level. I was good and I had a pretty golf swing. Like I think if you would have watched me just swing on the range and hit balls as a 12-year-old, you would say, oh, that's a nice golf swing. But I was never the best or anything. I looked up to the guys around me, my peers. They were way better than me, way more talented. It looked prettier. But what I did was just that I just got better every single year. And some of my friends, they were bests or prodigies at the time, but their development kind of stopped a few years later. Whereas I just kind of just kept practicing. I kept working on things and I got a little bit better every single year. And obviously I think you have to have some sort of talent to play the PGA Tour, but I would say, I guess in my talent wasn't so much the physical, it was understanding concepts and taking information and applying it to myself and then just getting better at doing it over time.
And like for your golf swing, I think it's a very unique swing. I think it's one that if you told somebody to go to try to replicate or copy, I think it'd be very difficult for someone to be able
Don't
to do
it.
I mean, I think you have you like your golf swing, I think is one of the most efficient golf swings on the PGA Tour, but I've tried to swing it myself and try to do some of the things that you do. And it's so impressive what you're able to do. And was it always that way? Were you always a guy that was like a shut face golfer? Were you a player that hit a fade, or did you have an instructor give you certain tools to get you to have this unique golf swing to where that you are, could be so efficient?
Well, I would, my pattern used to kind of be a lot different. I still have some early swings of my golf swing when I was younger, let's call it maybe 16, 17, or even 18. And I would kind of take it back way more out on the outside.
Wow.
And my face would be significantly less shut. And I would be like almost a little, not laid off at the top, but it's definitely not the right comparison, but a little John Rahm-ish kind of takeaway. Yeah. But my problem was back then is that I just had no depth to my arms in the backswing. So I would always kind of come from the outside and hit these big cuts. And I would always struggle with low point control. Sometimes I would, you know, hit it great, but most of the time, I would just hit it really low. And my teammates in college, they just remember my first year in school. I couldn't get the ball up in the air. I couldn't hit a three wood off the deck. Now I hit it super straight just because of my release pattern, but I just couldn't get the ball up in the air. And I don't really like, I've had numerous coaches kind of influence me, but I can't tell you how like this one advice or this one tip that I got that just changed everything. I guess just from, you know, swinging with different clubs and playing different courses and just growing, my swing just changed over time. And I remember one thought that I had in my head. I was like, you know, just going back in my backswing, why would I want to try to twist the hands or roll the forearms when I can just kind of keep the face pointing straight at the ball? And I guess that's what kind of developed that weird looking backswing, where I have that face really shut and now my hands are really far in. But at the same time, if you look back at really old golf swings, there are a bunch of good ball strikers that had that, swing back in the day.
Yeah. And for someone that had struggled with the golf swing like I had, and I was somebody that was a roller of the forearm and struggled I kind of hit that slap fade every now and then. But it makes perfect sense. It's just really hard to do for someone that was something that rolled this way. And when you start getting to a position at the top where your club face feels shut, it's like, all right, I've been a guy that used to have the back to the target in the downswing, but the correct matchup for a more shut face is, first off, you need a shallow delivery, but you need to rotate like crap, which is something I never was comfortable with, which is what you do so effectively.
Yeah. It's like, there's nothing we can argue about what's more optimal and stuff, but I mean, you look at, for example, Phil Mickelson golf swing. It's across the line. It's long. He's got, you know, cupped wrist and moves it down that way in the downswing. You know, most people wouldn't say that's optimal, but then you look at his career, he's won over 40 times on the PGA Tour and however many majors. I mean, it's impressive. So it's like, I think you just got to go with what you have and then understand how you can improve the golf swing within certain boundaries. Like, for example, this is my golf swing, shut and inside. Like, I'm not going to ever try to roll the forearms to make me try to hit it well. For me, I turn like crazy, as you said, and I have a bowed wrist, really shut club face. Now, my only problem is that sometimes my hands start to go a little too far away from my body in the downswing, so I don't have a lot of depth. So that's kind of the number one thing for me, is that I got to make sure that the hands kind of stay more in coming down. And if they're there, I can just turn as hard as I can and the ball is never going left. But it's all different for people, because if you try to do what I do with a completely different matchup, let's say your face is way more open, you're just going to hit it way to the right every single time. And I guess the important thing is just understanding what you do.
Yeah. And that's, I'm about to play golf this afternoon. And as you came on, I was marking up 9 golf balls just in case the day didn't go as planned. So I'm going to have that swing thought, keep it on the inside, on the downswing, and rotate and just do it like Victor.
Let me know, I guess.
I will. But all right. So we talked about your teen years, and one of the coolest videos that came from really the Ryder Cup week was, shockingly, your entire Ryder Cup team, your European side, listening to death metal. And did that start in like your teen years, or is this like something that has come on in the last 5 years or so?
Yeah. So I would say I've always liked Linkin Park. I remember I can't remember how old I was, but when Meteora came out and Hybrid Theory, I just loved those albums and thought they were great, but I never advanced my music tastes beyond that. And then at the time, I think I was maybe 16 16. I had a Swedish coach at the time, and it was early in the year in Norway, so it was too cold to practice here, but we took a road trip to Sweden because the climate is a little bit better that time of year. So we just spent a weekend where we practiced a little bit, and he's just a classic Swedish metalhead. So he listened to Metallica, Iron Maiden, you know, Rammstein, just like these bigger heavy metal bands. And I was like, dude, this is pretty cool. I like this. And I remember just coming back from the trip, I would go home and I literally went into YouTube and just typed best metal songs. And this band System of a Down came up and it was Chop Suey. I don't know if you guys have heard that song, but I'm sure a lot of the listeners have. And it started out beautiful. It was super melodic. And then they just started screaming. And I was like, damn, that doesn't sound very good. I don't like it. But I came back to it. And then when I listened to it the third time, the fourth time, and the fifth time, I was like, okay, I get it. I get it now. And ever since then, my music taste has just kind of progressed in a more extreme way since then.
So is this a Scandinavian thing? Or is this, you know?
There are a lot of Scandinavian metalheads for sure. Norway is kind of more famous for black metal music, which is I've never gotten into it. It's terrible, in my opinion. But the Swedes are really good at death metal, and they kind of do it all, progressive music. There are some really, really good Swedish bands.
That's awesome, man. And I'm sure the transition going from Norway to Stillwater, Oklahoma. I mean, first off, you're a guy that shows up. You're non-American. You show up. You like death metal. I mean, what was that translation like going from Norway to Stillwater? I know Oklahoma State, their expectations of their golf program is very high. Were you one that had those high expectations for yourself? Like, was it an instant fit in Stillwater?
Yeah, I mean, I had a goal. A lot of my buddies, they turned pro before school. And, you know, that was a very popular thing to do at the time. But I knew I just wasn't good enough. So I wanted to go to the States and play college golf and see what I could do, mainly to get an education and also play golf on the side. And then we'll just see what happens. I was lucky to have at the time, Chris Ventura.
Yeah.
He was at Oklahoma State at the time. And I came there for a visit. And obviously at the time, I asked the coaches and I asked the guys on the team, but it's a lot easier when you have someone there already that I can just ask questions all the time. And he just laid it out all for me. And when I came to Stillwater, it's a small town. There's not much going on, but it was perfect for me because I was just basically there to play golf. That's what I wanted to do. And when you walk into that clubhouse at Carson Creek and you see all the trophies, you see all the list of names that have gone to school there, it's pretty inspiring. And I honestly, within the first hour or two, I was like, yeah, I'm going to school here. This place is awesome.
Well, and you had a great career there. It was just 2 years and great freshman year. But talk to me about your sophomore year and how good that year was, winning a national championship at home. Was it cooler winning at Stillwater for a national championship for a home game or the European Ryder Cup?
Obviously, in terms of the grand scheme of things, the Ryder Cup is bigger and it's unbelievable and it's such an honor to win. But just emotionally, I was close with a lot of the guys on the golf team and at Oklahoma State, and being at home, we were the best team in the country, and we had that TV show or Netflix show Driven that followed us. Right. Like there's a lot of pressure on us to do well, and it's cool when you get to spend, you know, a year or 2 years, even in my case, with some of the guys on the team, and you're waking up every single day and you're trying to win the national championship. So it's just a different bond that we have playing on the same team, and to do it at home as well, with all the different circumstances was nuts. I think it's one of the most fun weeks I've had, in my career.
I remember watching it on TV and I was thinking to myself, I was like, this seems kind of unfair how like big of an advantage Oklahoma State has playing their home golf course and thousands of people out there just cheering for y'all's team. But luckily, I mean, y'all whooped up on them that final day.
Yeah, I would say we had a really good team and we were going to be hard to beat regardless of where we played.
Yeah.
But I do agree with you. Playing Carson Creek, it's intimidating if you've never been there before. If you're not a great driver of the ball, it's an intimidating place to show up at the first time. But when you play there every single day, you kind of get desensitized a little bit to looking at shit on both sides. And some of those holes, the greens are so soft and you can get just a crazy amount of spin on certain wedges, wow, especially with all the undulations and stuff. So that's where I think kind of the home course advantage came up.
Well, you eventually turned pro and you were kind of lumped into this next big three group. And one of those being your teammates, Matthew Wolf and then Colin Morikawa. Did you find yourself after you had turned pro and being compared to these other two guys and just y'all's career trajectories, did you ever find yourself playing the comparison game with those other two guys on trying to get off to faster starts or win more tournaments? Was that something that you ever really concerned you?
Not really. I mean, obviously I look at what the other guys were doing and obviously you see Matt wins 3M right out of the gate. Colin wins a few tournaments later and you're like, well, shoot, I better win soon. But I mean, it just, what I was thinking, it was more, man, that is super impressive. What they've already done. Like that's just unheard of what they just both did. And I guess it didn't really put more pressure on me. It was more like, hey, if they can do it, I believe I can do it. And I didn't really stress about it because I knew I had to do it in my own pace. The more I try to look at, what's going on around me, I'm not going to play my best. So I had to just take control of what I could control. And Puerto Rico, it was just a great week where I hit the ball well and I started making some putts and I think it was my 13th or 14th start as a pro. And I had won my first one as well. And I was like, damn, what just happened? This is pretty wild.
Yeah. I remember that week specifically, because I think one of the knocks on your game coming out was your short game. And that's something that you talked about after even one, just laughing about, you know, like my short game sucks. Like I just never had heard a pro actually like speak that into words. Most of the time that, we try to keep ourselves on this pedestal that we're good at everything, but you, for whatever reason, like you were so comfortable with yourself and your personality just showed in that interview, just like, well, like my short game sucks, but I won. So it's like, I just got to keep getting better.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's just true. I hadn't even been on tour a year. I'm not going to go out there and think that, oh, I'm super established and I'm the best I can be. No, I got a long ways to go and we can all get better. So it's like, you just saw me chunk 3 chip shots in a row 2 hours ago. I'm not going to stand here and pretend that I'm some chipping guru. Like it is whatever it is.
To be fair, you probably only missed like 4 greens that week. And just the only time you had to chip, you just couldn't quite get it on the green. Just take you a couple times.
Yeah. Yeah. We got there eventually.
Well, I think a nice, obviously a piece. So why you had such a great year. I think the addition of Joe Mayo, and I sent Joe a text the other day just saying that you were going to come on the show and would love to get some face on, some down the line stuff to where we can kind of look at just the transformation that you two went through and what y'all were able to do. And we actually have some video here that we can look at the first day of first time he'd ever looked at you, laid eyes on your chipping. And then we'll have some stuff that's later that we're looking at here. And
let's
this
check
is
it out.
Wednesday after Century. And I'm just curious, when you look at this, do you see anything that's like, whoa, I can't believe it was this off?
Actually, that doesn't look that bad. Because I remember I had sent some videos to Joe during that week. Hey, what do you think about my chipping? And he said, okay, it looks fine, but let's talk about it when you get to Vegas after that.
Yep.
So this actually looks, I would say, a lot better than it did maybe the year before. But what I will say is I'm sure if you put up the other video as well, you get to see it even better. But my head is obviously staying a little bit more back. It's not moving down and forward in the backswing. And then even in the downswing, it's just kind of staying back there. So basically, a lot of my weight is on the right foot. And I'd say everything else, kind of the bigger pieces, looks great. But that's also, I'm chipping off of, you know, nice bent turf, you know, or dormant grass that's like not that easy to or hard to chip off. If I can kind of lay the sod of it over it, and it's still going to be a fine shot. So that actually looks fine. But I think we'll see a big difference with the new motion.
Charlie, show me the down the line video. This is still, he hasn't gotten a full lesson yet. But I mean, Victor, when I look at this, like how much did you battle in your mind? It's like, all right, I'm a shut face player. This isn't typically the right form for chipping. You don't, you know, a lot of the great chippers have open club faces, cupped wrist. And is that something that you tried to change, or did you eventually figure out I can chip this way?
I dabbled in trying to move the face around a little bit, and I could do like certain flop shots. It would kind of work occasionally, just rolling the face open and just slamming it down on the ground. It would work. But I can't do this under the highest amount of pressure. It's not consistent enough. And one thing that's kind of interesting looking down the line is that, you know, normally in the golf swing, I have the shaft pitch is very steep in the backswing.
Right.
And then I shallow the shaft out in the downswing. But in the short game, you don't have enough time to do that. And obviously the ball is going way shorter. So I had this steep kind of move, and then I just shoot the hands out, and it works, but it's a kind of a weird matchup. But yeah, I just kind of thought that at a point there, I was like, well, there's gotta be something I can do. And when I talked to Joe, and he showed me a video of Brooks Koepka, Jordan Spieth, and Dustin Johnson, all former number one in the worlds. And they had a slightly flexed left wrist,
yeah,
and there's no throwing it with the hands. It's basically just a little bow in the backswing, and they just hold it throughout the swing. Like, and when that was explained to me, I was like, okay, that looks awesome, because that's what I feel when I would chip at my best. Cause I knew that if I start doing this stuff, I'm just going to bottom it out early every single time. So that's when I would just move the hands forward to get decent contact, but I would just hit fastballs. And that's when Joe started explaining to me that I was basically too shallow into the ball. I needed to get steeper into it, because then I can, if I get really steep on it, then it's easier to let this go a little bit late so I can get the loft part. But it's tough to do that if you're back here, because you got to secure low point control somehow.
And I mean, this the bunker this, too, right? Yeah, like if you're back behind in the bunker, that's no good. Did your bunker game immediately, that's probably the easiest thing that you're able to fix quickly, because you're able to actually make a pretty good swing at it.
Yeah. And it was, honestly, the bunker stuff was the biggest hallelujah, experience I've had. Cause I used to take so much sand in the bunker. And I just remember if I played Memorial that I won at this year, I just had no chance, because I honestly thought it was a stupid course for me to play, because it is so hard to hit fairways and it's so hard to hit greens. I can stripe it and still only hit 11 or 12 greens out there. And those bunkers, you're always going to be on a downslope
always,
and hitting downhill
always.
And if you can't catch the ball cleanly out of the bunkers, I'm not even stopping the ball on the green when I miss the green there. So this was a huge thing. I mean, you can see in the backswing, my head is staying forward, and just how much forward I'm moving the pelvis, and that left knee is just staying bent and forward.
Yes.
So I'm getting really close to the ball and just spinning the daylights out of it.
Any great bunker player gets that weight for the left knee is bent and they're able to throw the club face. And that's like the one feel I have in the bunker is like somebody's holding something on the right side of my head to where I can throw the club head in the downswing to where I can release it and get as much spin and speed as I possibly can.
Yeah. But it's hard to do that if you're not already forward.
Exactly.
Because you can't do that if you're back.
Exactly. All right, let's look at the finished product with your pitching. I want to see just like as you describe it, like this is at the Open Championship and Joe Mayo, he described this as like, I mean, this is just flawless is what he said.
Yeah, and that turf there is obviously for those of you guys that haven't been at a links course in England or Scotland, like the turf is very firm.
Mm.
And it's so easy if you bottom out early to get these, you know, the clunk sound and the ball just comes shooting off. And it just makes it so much easier for me to exaggerate the feel of, okay, I can move. I'm trying to move my left, my head out of the screen almost in the backswing and then just let the club head just fall directly on top of the ball. And it's such a nice feeling because you know, you're not going to bottom out early and you know, the ball's just going to come out a little lower with a lot of spin.
Victor, did you ever have any issues with like the leading edge? Cause like when you get that far forward and you're that steep, like, did you ever have issues where that, I know your low point's now forward, but did you ever have issues with the leading edge getting too diggy?
Well, here's what Joe, how he explained it to me. My wedge has 6 degrees of bounce.
Yeah.
But we measured these shots. I'm leading the shaft 15 degrees.
Wow.
So where does the bounce go? It's no longer there. All you're using is the leading edge.
Yeah.
But it doesn't matter when I've hit the ball first.
Yeah.
The bounce is gone. And what you will see is that what was really cool when we measured a couple of these shots is that I'm not really taking big divots.
No.
Because and this is something Joe would show me videos of Scottie Scheffler. I think he does it the best out of anyone that I've seen, where his head is moving, I don't know how many inches, let's call it 5 inches in the downswing up.
Yes.
So his club head is moving down, getting a steep angle of attack, but his head is moving up.
Yes.
And getting the club out of the ground, but it's still moving down at a steep angle.
Yep.
So, and that's, I mean, how else are you going to get the club out of the ground when the club isn't moving very fast? In the golf swing, in the full swing, I turn my chest.
Mm-hmm.
So that obviously gets the club out of the ground, but you don't have that luxury. You don't have enough time in the short game. And when Joe just explained this to me, it all just started making a lot of sense.
And that's the crazy thing about this game is that the full swing and pitching, they're completely different sequences in how things are supposed to happen. Like with pitching, it goes club head. You want to get taller. And then you're going to get some torso rotation as you get weight on that front foot. And it's just the opposite with the full swing. Like we always hear start from the ground up. Like you want to start from the ground up, hip turn, and then eventually it gets into the club head. Where with pitching, it's just totally opposite. Like when did that like whole phenomenon like enter your head? It's like, holy crap, this is just a different action.
Yeah, I mean, I did understand that in the short game, you definitely wanted to do the opposite of basically what you do in the full swing. You're trying to make the ball go really fast in the full swing. And in the short game, you want the ball to slow down.
Yes.
And if you're really shallow and you're shoving the handle forward, that's obviously closing down the spin lofts and the ball is coming off really fast. So it just made sense that if we're trying to slow this ball down, I got to get really steep on it. It was just, I knew what I had to do, but right. I didn't know how to do it, if that makes sense.
All right. So you start working with Joe Mayo, and when was the moment where the information or was it a particular shot in tournament play earlier this year, where you're like, holy crap, I have not been able to do that before. And not only that, I was able to actually trust it.
Honestly, it didn't take long. He introduced the short game stuff to me Tuesday at Riviera. And I would say obviously what's the grass called there again? I forget.
It's Paspalum?
No. Kukuya. No, Kukuya. Kukuya. It's you know, the ball sits up pretty generously. It's not the worst thing to chip off of, but I just remember there down by kind of between one and two, that green down there. I just started really ripping him off as soon as Joe had me just kind of move my head forward and try to slam the ball on top of slam the club on top of the ball. And the ball just came off really low and just started spinning like crazy. So I knew that, okay, this is right. Like this is how it's supposed to be done. Now the problem was it took me time to trust how hard I needed to hit it. Because I was used to, don't hit the ground and then backing up and then kind of scooping it. And then I would just hit the ball so inconsistently. And now these balls were just shooting at the pin super low and just ripping last minute. Mm. And I just remember on number 10, I missed it right, of course, oh, as God. You're not supposed That's to do. and I walk up to the ball and it's, I don't know how he got the lie, but it's sitting up in the rough. It's like one of those spinner Kukuya lies. Like, you know, you can really rip it from there.
Yeah.
And I just told myself, okay, just trust the technique. I can do this, even though the shot is really difficult. I was just trying to hopefully get the ball on the green and just give me a four, even five would be, you know, it's acceptable. And I hit the purest shot. It came off super low and just, it had so much spin on it, but because I just wasn't used to how it was coming off, I hit it short, and because it had so much spin, it plugged in the front bunker. So then I made double from there. So it was, I would say the first month or two, it took time to just trust the movement of what I was doing, how hard to hit it. Certain shots, you know, you can mess around with, okay, now I want to hit it really low. This one, I want to kind of launch a little bit. Sometimes you can, you know, now I can even hit flop shots under pressure. So it's like knowing when to hit certain shots and how much to, just kind of just perfect the last few pieces of it.
And that's so interesting. And what sticks out to me, and for someone that struggles in a certain area, I would imagine that you probably just had like one thing you could really only trust with your pitching, that like, this is the only shot I had. But now, would you say, is there any shot that you feel like you can't pull off with a wedge now around the greens?
No, I mean, I feel really confident in my abilities around the greens, and it's, you know, it's obviously still a short sample size, but I think my strokes gained around the greens, it used to be whatever, a little bit on the negative side. And then since the PGA, I think I'm around 30th on tour around the greens. And some of those shots that I'm hitting with the amount of spin, I don't think I can hit it much better. I think what is tough sometimes is when you're moving forward and getting the steep angle of attack is the ball is launching low. Mm-hmm. And sometimes on tour, you'll get the greens where they'll get really firm.
Right.
And if you have downwind or a short pin, and maybe you have a little bit of a rough lie, even in the fairway, but let's call it first cut. It's hard to, you know, because you can still hit it shallow, launch it high with a lot of spin, but it's very hard to get the right contacts.
Right.
So I just sometimes when the lies are really bad, I just lean forward a crazy amount, but to secure contact. But then the ball is coming off lower, and sometimes you don't have the luxury of bouncing the ball into the pin.
That makes sense.
So that's one I would say is that one's tough. And then another shot that's very difficult. I've gotten a lot better at it, but it's still very tough is when the ball is sitting up really high in the rough.
Cause you gotta be
like
shallow.
The US Open rough and the ball is just sitting really high up. And if the ball, you know, obviously you want to get close to the ball, but if you're moving really steep on it, the ball is
the face.
It's just exactly.
Yeah.
So that's when I try to almost, it's the same movement, but almost feel like my hands kind of go around me a little bit.
Which shallows you
out. So I try to have a way more.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a shallowing move because, as you said, as you saw in the down the line chipping motion, my hands go really far out.
Yeah. I saw that.
And that can get me in trouble when it comes to that shot. So I would say those are the most challenging shots that I'm facing around the greens.
All right, Victor. Well, I've been so impressed with, you know, all the improvements you've made in your short game. And I went on this podcast. It was called the Loop Golf Digest podcast. This was in around the Memorial. And Charlie, why don't you set this one up for us on this one?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Victor, obviously, huge credit to you. You've done a lot of amazing work this year. Joe Mayo as well. But I don't think I'm doing my job as a producer here if I don't make sure that Smiley gets some form of credit for your success this year. As Smiley noted, this is an excerpt on June 5th from Golf Digest, the Loop podcast. Well, let's all listen to this together.
Who would you say right now, I know it's really hard, is the best golfer? Because obviously you had Rom dominating. Now you have Scotty's just consistency. And then you have Brooks showing up at these majors and just dominating. So I assume it's of those three right now, because Rory, for whatever reason, is just a tick off right now. But of those three guys, you know, especially as we head into the US Open, who would you take if you had to pick one going into that next major?
Yeah, I think I'd probably pick Victor Hovland. I've been high on him the entire year. I just think he's continuing to get better in his short game, and the stats have shown that he just needs to be just a little bit above average. And we said the same thing about Scottie Scheffler. If he just putts average,
right,
he's going to win golf tournaments. If Victor Hovland is just a little bit above average in his around the green stats, then he's going to be right there.
You said that in June. What a hot take.
I mean, I was screaming it from the rooftops. I'd watched you at the Players. I'd watched you to Bay Hill. And I felt like you could have easily won those two events. You were right there those two weeks. You were hitting it great. I thought you looked confident in your short game. And then I was on the call for the Masters as well. And I had your group. And I was just sitting there watching some of the shots, because I've played there. I know some of these shots. And there was a particular shot that you hit out there that I was like, holy crap, he hasn't had that shot. Like, this guy is playing with a lot of confidence right now.
Yeah, it's funny. I've been, you know, Joe and I have been talking about it. And, you know, I would say the full game and the short game, everything kind of started coming together, obviously, towards the last part of the season. And we've just been talking, hey, it'd be really cool to go back if we could and play Bay Hill again, play the Players, play the Masters, and then see what would have happened then. But obviously it's a learning experience. And I would say I used those opportunities to learn a lot, and so happy that it turned around for me at the Memorial. I kind of snuck that one in there and then finished the way that I did. The year has been, it's been incredible, but so that just gives me a lot more confidence going into next year that, okay, we can, you know, this is not a fluke. I feel like we can keep going with this direction.
Yeah. And you heard me say it back in June, and I think a lot of people, you know, have been saying it after you just won back-to-back FedEx Cup playoff events and you played so well at the Ryder Cup. You know, how does it make you feel to be called potentially the best player in the world?
Well, it's very flattering.
Yeah.
I would say that, yes, the way I've played the last couple of months, I would say I believe I am, but at the same time, it's, you know, what Scotty did this year, what John Rahm did, and how consistent Rory's played this year. I mean, I think any of us could be the best player in the world on any given week. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you know, it's, how much does that matter? You know, we're all really, really good when we play our best. And sometimes the other guys don't play very well, but then the next time they do. So it's just like, it's just how this game of golf works. But I'm very optimistic about next year and the coming years. If I can, you know, obviously maintain what I've done, but at the same time, keep improving as I have done every single year. I'm super pumped, and we'll see how it ends up. You know, there's the other guys are playing some damn good good golf as well. So it's like, and there's a lot of luck to winning tournaments. Sometimes it just goes your way and sometimes it doesn't. So, you know, all I can do is just kind of keep working and and take care of business, control the things that I can control.
Yeah. And you do such a good job of just like putting yourself in contention. And like you said, there is an element of luck to winning golf tournaments. Sometimes it's going on a birdie barrage at the BMW Championship on the back nine to go win it. And then there's other times like the Tour Championship where you just like play steady the entire time. You just never let anybody off the hook. So it was an incredible year winning the Tour Championship. And I know next year you're really excited about the golf in front of you, and so am I. But before we go, we have got to talk about the Ryder Cup. I was pretty much on all of your matches that week, so I kind of got to see every single golf shot that you hit right from the get-go. And we have a clip of the first hole on the green. You get to listen to my call, which potentially was my worst call of the week because you screwed me. Like you did, because 23 out of 24 players would have grabbed the putter on the back of that green on one. I looked at it. I walked right past it. It was a putt. Like, it was never in my mind a chip. And I was like, kind of like getting situated because behind the green, there was just so many people and I'm trying to get a spot that's like, nobody would hear me talk. And I finally get there. And then like, you're already like, you have the wedge out and you're taking practice swings. I was like, what is going on? And then they're like, and said, all right, down to one green, Victor Hovland. Let's listen to this thing, Charlie.
Back out to the first. We say hello to Smiley Kaufman.
Good morning, Terry. Victor Hovland with a wedge. A little surprised he doesn't have the putter out. Very fast downhill after he's going to get over this little slope.
And pull back of this green. Look at that. That's why he used the wedge.
That's why he used the wedge. And I was and listen,
suck it, Smiley.
I know, suck it indeed. And listen, there's times with calls that I've learned, it's like if I say, you know, like, I don't understand the play of the wedge here, and then you pull off the shot, it's like, great, that's perfect, because it makes your shot look as good as it did. But the end of that call, where I was trying to describe like all the things that you were having to maneuver through, I was like, couldn't get like all the words out in time, because like at that time you'd already hit the pitch. Now it's already hit into the slope. You're playing a bump, because I didn't know if you're gonna try to like play a little like flop on the other side of it, but you hit that little low spinner shot that you're talking about, which you call that spin, where it gets on top of that hole and rolls into the hole.
Yeah. So I asked Shay. We walked up to the top of the hill that was maybe 10 feet in front of me. And I asked him, it's like, hey, do you like, is the putter stopping here? And he's like, I think the best you can do with a putter here is probably 10 feet.
Really?
You know? Wow. Six to 10 feet. And that's kind of the feeling that I got, you know. Obviously first hole of the Ryder Cup, you can't, you know, it wouldn't be bad to just take the putter and just lag it down there. And I'll give Ludwig the par putt and see if he can make it. But I just thought that, you know, I've got this shot. I knew exactly, hey, I can get this a little bit closer if I hit this low bump that spins on top of the hill, because then it's going to have way less speed than the putt is going to have, because it's just going to keep rolling. And the only thing that was a little difficult was that it was early in the morning and it was a little dewy.
Yeah.
Now that had me a little worried, because when it's a little wetter or a little wet, some moisture can get in between the face and the ball, and you can lose some of that friction. Mm. The ball will pop up a little bit more and it'll have more or less spin.
It'll skid on you on the green too. Take a real big bounce off that hill. And next thing you know, it's that first bounce is five feet short of the hole.
Yep, exactly. So that had me a little bit worried, but I just, again, my cue was basically, okay, just get really far forward, hit this thing really low and into the hill, and it should spin a little bit. And then as I started going down there, I was like, okay, that looks good. I'll keep walking onto the side to see, you know, how it's going to go past the hole. And then it just went in. And I was like, you can't, this can't be serious.
Well, that's what I said, because I was laughing walking to the second green. I was like, well, that was a fun first call from my Ryder Cup. I've never been to a Ryder Cup. And my first call was like just a, honestly, the craziest call I had the whole week, because it was just something I didn't expect. And definitely a learning experience for that one for my next call. But So you're playing with Ludvig in the alternate shot foursomes the first both mornings, and the second morning, obviously, you two played great, winning 9-7, which I'm sure you're going to look back on and be like, holy crap, that we beat Brooks Koepka and Scottie Scheffler 9-7. That was a trouncing. And it was. But y'all two both played extremely well that day. But the first day, in the first five holes, or maybe even six holes, I know it was five, I felt Ludvig was definitely nervous and definitely off. But I sensed from you confidence and like, dude, hop on my back. And whenever you get comfortable, we're going to all be right here. But like the first three or four holes, like it really felt like to me that you were carrying them to an early lead. Did you kind of sense his nervousness and the fact that like, I got to step up early to get this lead?
Well, I'm sure he was nervous, but that's a cool thing with him is that he did not show it at all. He is, I mean, he's like Henrik Stenson. He's the new Iceman. he was so calm, and yeah, he hit a couple shots that I'm sure he would like to have back.
But you saved it. Like you were saving like the chip in on one, then you almost chipped in on three. I mean, I think that chip was going by about 10, 15 feet,
yeah.
But you almost still made it. And then you were able to keep that lead, right?
Yeah. I mean, I kind of look at it. Yes, it was early in the round, but then he came and really
played good,
started heating up and started hitting these awesome shots, started making putts. I mean, when you couple his driving long and straight, and then he starts making putts, it's just, it's so much fun to watch. And I was just happy that I just tried to put the ball in the green, and it was,
he putted really well.
My work here is done.
And drove it good.
So yeah. that was really cool. But I think that was really fun for me to play the foursomes is because that golf course is a little bit janky. There's a lot of stuff that can happen. And with that rough being so thick, you're going to hit some OKT shots where you're not even going to advance it on the green. And now you have to chip and putt. And that's just where I feel like I've taken such big steps the last year to where, okay, we're out of position, but it's fine. I can chip the ball close and we can get some momentum. So, you know, I guess just the whole mindset has changed because I'm confident in those areas now. It's like, okay, to be honest with you, the first couple of days, I hit good in terms of strokes gained and stuff, I'm sure, but it didn't feel very good. And I was like, I can't really find the center. I'm curving it a little bit more than I would like, but I know how to play with it. And I knew that, okay, my chipping and putting is good enough to where we can still make this work. And I think that's super exciting.
Well, I'm going to leave you with this question, and you don't have to give us anything if you don't want, but if there's something that comes to your mind, we'd obviously love to hear it. And I know you've had some time to reflect on the Ryder Cup. Is there any story from that week, whether it was in the team room or the bus or the after party, that just sticks out to you? It's like, man, I'm never going to forget this. This was either too funny or just very memorable in a very whatever way you want to look at it.
Yeah, we obviously had some banter going, and the group chat was on fire even before the Ryder Cup, and it's still been, you know, good after the fact as well. So
it's like a good trip, man. When the group chat's still going a couple weeks after, you know, like it was a great week.
Yeah. So I don't have like one thing in particular, but it's just so cool that, you know, this, I wasn't quite sure how it was going to be this time around, because 2 years ago, although we got smacked, I was on the team with guys that I had looked up to my whole life, you know, legends of European golf. They were all on that team basically. And this time around, it was a brand new crew. And I think just the amount of fun that we had and how well we just bounced off each other. We just had such a great time, and yeah, it just exceeded all expectations. I don't think the Ryder Cup in Rome from a European perspective could have been any better than it ended up to be. And obviously you add the drama in there as well. I think it's just the best event. It's so much fun.
Man, how excited are you for Bethpage? I know you like still got to make the team, this and that, but still, like, that's got to be, all those guys are probably just thinking, get us to Bethpage. But you've played a home one, you've played an away one. I'm sure you guys are very excited to bring that youth movement of from that European team over to Bethpage. And you've played in New York. You know how crazy that place can be.
Yeah, I can't speak for everyone else, but I'm sure we're really pumped. This was a big deal for us, and we want to bring the same intensity and you know, beat the U.S. as well in New York. But we're not. We know that it's going to be hard. The fans there are going to be cheering for Team U.S. and we're going to hear it if we hit some bad shots. And I think it'll be a completely different challenge, and we have to be ready for that. You have to, I think you really got to be confident in yourself and your abilities to be able to handle that pressure, because it's going to be completely different. So we're not underestimating how the U.S. team is going to be in 2 years' time.
Well, it'll be a fun one to watch. I know that. And I know that you have a lot to get to. And we thank you, Victor, for spending time on the show today. I mean, just from breaking down your short game to talking about your full swing to the entire year that you had, just a banner year for you. And I'm sure is going to continue to propel you to the next level and to higher heights that I'm sure that you're looking forward to playing some of the golf's biggest stages next year. And again, thank you for your time. And I'm going to use a couple of those swing thoughts today, hoping I can just channel a little bit of that Victor Hovland magic off the tee. But again, Victor, thank you for your time, and hope to have you on here again soon.
Yeah. Thank you, guys. I've actually watched a couple of episodes of y'all earlier.
My man.
Did you guys actually just start or something? It just started popping up on my YouTube, so I was like, yeah, I'll check it out.
Yeah.
And you guys have some good takes, so thanks for thanks for what you guys do. So I'm happy to come on and shoot the shit.
Yeah, you see folks, that is a stamp of approval from Mr. Victor Hovland, and that's all we might need. We could be big time. We could be big time. Who knows at this point? Sky's the limit. Thanks, Vic.
Love it.
The Smiley Show is part of the SiriusXM Sports Podcast Network. If you enjoyed this episode and want to hear more, please give a 5-star rating and leave a review. Subscribe today wherever you stream your podcast.
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off 2 or more select major appliances. Plus, get 3 Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9, selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.